Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Friday, episode 14 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. My name is Coleman, and I will be your host this morning. And it looks like we're going to have a great panel up here today. Good morning, everybody. I see AC, Randy K, Jordan on Operation Libertas handle. I see Wade out there. How is everybody doing this Friday morning?
Absolutely fantastic. It's Friday. Let's go.
100%. Well, we have everyone still kind of getting all the gunk out of their eyes and waking up and joining the panel. I want to make sure everyone knows the purpose of this space. And our mission of this show is to defend the values that our nation was founded upon. We want to champion decentralized, trustless systems that empower individuals, communities, and small businesses, to eliminate a central authority so we can advance the cause of a free and open society. We do this by harnessing the power of Bitcoin to promote a world where every individual has the undeniable right to control their own destiny, their own assets, and their own privacy. We do not support tyranny in any of its forms, and we will use our combined experience and passion to ensure that the promise of liberty thrives. And together, we will continue our oaths to safeguard the ideals that define us. We are veterans, we are Bitcoiners, and we are here for freedom. Hoorah! Good morning, Terrence. Good morning, Gabe Lord. Good morning, Lisa Huff.
What's the good news today, Coleman?
The good news is we get another day to fight tyranny. It looks like it's coming back again, or has never left. But it looks like we get another chance to talk about it and how it's starting to leech into every aspect of our lives. Jordan, let me know if you have that video up with a thumbs up. But we have a speech from Harris that we just kind of threw up there. And it's talking about how she wants to try and punish companies that are promoting hate speech. And it's very alarming. I'm not for hate speech. I don't think anybody up here is for hate speech, but I am the belief that to counter hate speech, you have to allow all speech, and good speech will triumph hate speech. So once we get that thumbs up, Jordan, just let me know, and we'll play this short little clip, and then I'd like to get everybody's thoughts on it. So sit back, grab a coffee, and just listen to this really quick.
Am I the only one not hearing anything?
No, I thought it was just me.
Department of Justice, and will put the Department of Justice of the United States back in the business of justice. We will double the Civil Rights Division and direct law enforcement to counter this extremism. We will hold social media platforms accountable for the hate infiltrating their platforms because they have a responsibility to help fight against this threat to our democracy. And if you profit off of hate, if you act as a megaphone for misinformation or cyber warfare, if you don't police your platforms, we are going to hold you accountable as a community. And
now we can just pause it right there. The speech goes on to somebody's thoughts, but I definitely want to get everybody's views on this and the importance of making sure that we have a decentralized and incompromisable place to express our thoughts and our feelings.
I gotta jump in here, man. We hear these words just regurgitated and thrown at us again and again and again, and they talk about hate speech, and they talk about these wars on hatred. And it's such an ambiguous notion that you can actually stop something that is so naturally occurring as a human experience. I'm not even going to call it an emotion, but I mean, hatred is something that happens. It's a part of the human condition. And it's fascinating to me that it's something that is really essentially undefinable. I mean, what can you really call hate speech? I mean, it's such a shifting spectrum and that yardstick is fluctuating and unstable. And I think that we all probably can come to the conclusion, if we haven't already, that, I mean, essentially it's something that does not go along with someone else's messaging or narrative. And it is entirely subjective based on whoever's in charge and whoever's making the rules. So yeah, I would definitely say that this is a shift towards tyranny, that certainly does need to be monitored, because speech is speech. And if you hate it, that's your problem, essentially. So that's my input on that.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't like it, counter the argument. Make sure everyone else can hear the other side of the view of your views. And you're right. It seems like hate speech is just whoever's in charge, and if they don't like it or doesn't fit the narrative, it's deemed as that. I'm sure there's a couple books we could all reference where they reference this happening.
I was just going to say, I'm wrapping up reading How Civil Wars Start. And I mean, I think it has some like interesting points behind it. But then once she gets into talking about America and how where she thinks we're currently on the precipice of a civil war, which may or may not be true. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with that. But her whole basis is really wrapped around basically everything that Kamala is saying in that clip of, we've got to crack down on social media because it allows people too much of a platform to spread this hate. And we have to do that to protect democracy. And it's like, do you even hear the words coming out of your mouth? Like, what are you going to define as hate? That's like one question. Where do you draw the line? Even if we all thought that it was a good idea to get rid of hate, how would you even accomplish that without overstepping? It just seemed, and she's so blatantly like against Trump, which like be against Trump, I don't care. But when she uses clips that are out of context that we've all seen played and regurgitated over and over by the corporate press that are taken out of context, her bias is so obvious that she might have some really good background on it, but it's all coming back to like, this is the regime's narrative and this is what they want to push so that they can get back to controlling the narrative and controlling what we all think. They're just terrified of us being able to talk. And this is just a simple scapegoat. As much as they want to say these like white supremacists or whoever, all these very fringe groups that have no power, as much as they want to say that they're using whatever other race as a scapegoat, they're just doing the same thing. They're using this very fringe small group of people as the scapegoat to crack down on everything, and everybody loses in that situation. Like all of democracy is gone if you aren't allowed to say bad things. Free speech is not there to protect your right to talk about what you had for breakfast in the morning.
Yes, absolutely. And it was so important. Like the founders made sure that was the number one thing that they put in when we founded this country. Good morning, Dombey.
What up, y'all? Yeah, great point. I caught the clip. You know, it's ironic, like that message coming from you. Bitcoin is really, especially with the Dems, has shown us how they heavily craft narrative without like valid information, right? And so it's ironic that this is the approach they're taking of attacking what they call slanted misinformation and hate speech, when we've seen multiple use cases where that's the strategy. So maybe it is a thing of like, well, we want to be the only ones that can deploy that. So that's interesting. But ultimately, right, this is bullish for like Noster and open source protocols, because, you know, not to say that those depend on this kind of action, but if you do have true free speech in some of the mainstream social media apps, you know, I would see that as a delay for adoption of tools like Noster, whereas the harder these attacks take place and people can see this, the more traffic is going to get driven to open source decentralized protocols. So in that sense, it's bullish. AC?
Yeah, I agree with everything that everyone has said so far. Building upon what Jordan had said earlier, I don't think that this is really an attack on free speech. That's kind of the vehicle that they're using. But really, this is an attack, or this is to build inroads into breaking encryption. And, you know, if we think that the primary vehicles now are Twitter, and we're, you know, a lot of the communities moving over to Nostr or other things, really, this is an attack on how do they build inroads into encrypted communications, and how do they build a platform and a base to be able to subpoena and force companies within this jurisdiction to be able to compel them to give up encryption keys so that they can monitor everything that everyone is saying. Free speech is just the thing that they're using to build buy-in from the public, but really this is an attack on encrypted communications.
Yes. Yeah, and just make sure that you know that there are other options out there. You don't have to use, again, you don't have to rely on just X or your other social media platforms. Make sure that we're branching out and you get familiar and mention Nostr. Make sure that people know that that is out there. Lisa, I'd like to get your views if you have a chance.
Yeah, hey guys, good morning. I don't know, it's troubling. I know that you all think I'm just so nice all the time, but the truth is I'm very not nice, but I only feel comfortable being not nice around people that I know really well, which most of the time Ella carries that burden. We should be able to say what is on our mind. We should be able to process the world individually and speak our minds. I actually think that is our duty as humans. And we have all forgotten how to think. Not Bitcoiners, but the rest of those people. They just don't think. And so, you know, if they follow this administration down this dirty rat hole, I guess we've concluded what we formerly have known as democracy. Like, I really stand up for the right to be mean. I really don't understand why I can't express a view that in my mind is not copacetic with my values. And that's really where I feel that we are. And I think there's gradients of that, right? If you work for a public company, you're really not likely to speak your mind unless you're, one of these, incredible billionaires, thank God, who are standing up for free speech. So, all that to say, thank you for holding these spaces, and just thank you for giving us a place to talk about it.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And I think to touch on what you just said there, Lisa, I think this is kind of, it depends on how far you want to go down this rabbit hole, but you can make an argument that this has been pre-planned for the last 15, 20 years. When I was a kid, there was always that saying, sticks and stones will break your bones, but names will never hurt you. And that saying really kind of just started to get changed over to, no, like names are just as dangerous as sticks and stones. And I think that's built into where we're getting to right now with the internet and speech, where anything you say can be construed as lethal or dangerous. And so...
Let me ask you this. Like, what... Why can't you tell me that you think I'm stupid, ugly, fat, racist? You know, think of like the most horrible adjective to describe someone, or a hurtful adjective. It doesn't even have to be the most harmful. What is a hurtful adjective? Like, why can I not hear that as a human being? Why can I not receive your criticism? It's really up to me how I process that. And I do think that, you know, sometimes we get criticism that hits really close to home, and it's a way for us to get better. But I think this is just all part of this protective, dunce society that we are creating. And, you know, I feel so bad for all the kids that had to go back to school this year and just sit in these stupid classrooms listening to stupid rhetoric for 8 or 9 hours a day, and then parents are stressed out. Like, the whole way that we do life is broken. Man, maybe this is like a call to arms for us to fix it.
Yeah, and Lisa, if Coleman were to call you you know, lazy, fat, stupid, or whatever adjectives were hurtful or inaccurate, you would just choose to not speak with Coleman. You would redirect your energy and attention elsewhere. And that's why I kind of like what Dom, where Dom was going when he just spoke, because Bitcoin, you know, money in general is the ultimate form of communication. We choose how we show up. We choose our preferences, our choices. We communicate to others on their services, on their goods. Everything that we do, we communicate with money. And, you know, setting price controls and, you know, government manipulation aside, you know, ultimately the free market communicates to people, you know, how they participate and how we coordinate. And that's what's great about Bitcoin, because, you know, it is communication, right? Like, it may not be 26 letters, but it's, you know, ones and zeros. And, you know, our protection of Bitcoin is, you know, 2048 words if we're using BIP39. And, you know, what's to say is a good word or a bad word, and we're just assembling them in a certain order. And even within the Bitcoin community, you know, if there's someone you don't like, or you don't like what they're saying or what they're doing, you choose not to deal with them. But yeah, it's okay for us to hear something. Someone should be able to voice their opinion. You know, aside from maybe yelling fire in a theater. I know Dom Bay's getting tired of running to every theater.
Yeah, oh, I 100% agree with what you said. I mean, Bitcoin is the ultimate form of language and a way for us to speak to the other 8 billion people that we share this earth with. I think one of the things that like haunts me on a pretty regular basis is an interaction I had with a Bitcoiner on the ski slopes in March in Jackson. And I don't ski, but this amazing skier comes off the slopes, a Bitcoiner that you guys know. And I said, "Oh my God, you look amazing. How was your day?" And he said, "You know what, Lisa, I'm living my best life." And like his whole face, his whole way he held his body, everything reflected that he was living his best life. And when I look out, you know, if I look at my neighbors or people at the grocery store or people on an airplane or wherever, right? Like I look out into the people I see every day. I don't see anyone who honestly is living their best life. Who I don't feel like I could go up to anyone and say, "How was your day?" I don't think there'd be one person that would say that they're living their best life. And if we aren't all striving to make every day like us a version of living our best lives, we have failed humanity. Like we have lost the plot. So, you know, Bitcoin is our right. It is our right to communicate with whom we want. It is our right to spend money on things that we want with money that we've earned. It just doesn't have to be much more complicated.
Lisa, I never viewed myself as that good of a skier, but I mean, people's perception, I think, is valuable. And so I do appreciate that very much.
And for the record, Lisa, you're smart, beautiful, and thin.
This is why I hang out with Bitcoiners, because you lie to me. But thank you. I will choose to view that just positively. But actually, so, and then I'll quit talking. I'm sorry, I pogged the space. I was reading something last night about, then there was like this clip that came up, like women who don't have a lot of friends are actually the ones that are the most confident. And you know, when I got divorced, I lost a bunch of my friends, and then I moved and like lived in a rabbit hole. And that's actually how I found Bitcoin. I was living in like a really small space in a really cold place, and I had no neighbors. And I discovered Bitcoin. But like Bitcoin is this opportunity for us to really reflect, right? And tune out all of this noise of what other people are saying about us or what other people are saying about other people. Like it just gives you the option to just opt out of that. I'm going to live this way, true to myself, pursuing my best life. That's what Bitcoin is.
Man, y'all are on fire this morning. And Lisa, feel free to keep going on these talks and rants. Like you're killing it this morning.
Yeah, Lisa, you always have permission to just talk. You could talk the entire time, and we would all be fine with that. I did want to, I mean, kind of segue that into like, I don't think a lot of people understand that we're kind of living through an ideological battle. There are people like the Harrises that are pushing this narrative because they want control. They want to crack down on everything. Like, the only way for their system to keep going is to continue to promulgate it. And that's one side of the ideological spectrum. And then there's kind of our side where we're looking for truth. We're supporting of free markets because it kind of filters out what's true and what's real and what's going to work and what doesn't. But we are living in an environment where the other side will use force, propaganda, coercion to achieve their goals. So don't get fooled into thinking that we are living in an environment where that is a threat and we are up against that. But I do believe that truth will always prevail, that people will always gravitate towards truth and towards the light. So I think we're on the right side of this fight, but the other side is going to play absolutely dirty. They will be the ones to conduct violence and then blame us. They will do everything under the book to hold on to their power. So just be prepared for that fight. But I think also the white pill is that everything is on our side because we're not necessarily ideological, except for we are looking for truth.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't go out there and don't get enticed or fall for the bait. Stand your ground and keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, we've got to be smart out there because it's like you said, there is no way that when an entity or a group of entities, when they secure as much power as they have, they do not just let go of it. It just doesn't happen that way. They're going to exercise it, any way that they possibly can, which has been demonstrated. We see more and more where they're saying the quiet parts out loud because they don't care what we know anymore, because they know that nobody's paying attention and nobody's going to stop it. Something else that's interesting, in addition to the surface level reactions that we all experience when we see things like this, you know, as an attack on free speech and so forth, I think there's a deeper message here, in anyone standing up and claiming that they can stop something as ambiguous again as hate. And that is there's really, well, first I want to kind of touch on something that Lee was talking about where it's not okay just to say mean things to people anymore. Look, when I was a kid, I know that this is going to be impossible to believe, but, I've always been, pretty cool. At least my mom says so. And when I was a kid, I was bullied. Okay. There was this one guy that was always just giving me shit, okay? In elementary school, just like calling me mean names, picking on me, making me go boo-hoo and feel bad about myself. And, one day I had enough. And I was fortunate enough that I have big brothers, and they were like, hey, man, you know what you got to do? You got to kick that guy in the nuts, and then you need to kick him in the face when he leans down because he hurts so bad. And so the guy was messing with me, and I kicked him in the nuts. And then when he bent his face down, I kicked him in the face. And I know I'm probably inciting violence right now, and I really don't care. And then I jumped on top of him, and I started punching me in the face. And you know what? He didn't bother me anymore. And it was okay. And a few years later, we actually became friends. It was all right, because that's just kind of what guys did back then. But it taught me a valuable lesson in life. And that is that if someone's going to mess with you, then you got to kind of, you got to strengthen up a little bit and you got to take care of yourself. Now, that sort of thing now is no longer acceptable. Okay. And what happens is if you're bullied, then you're supposed to go sit on the buddy bench or something like that, or you're not supposed to stand up for yourself. But what happens is then you have people like Harris that stand up and say, listen, we can protect you. We can stop hate. So you don't have to be threatened by anything. And what that does is it creates in the minds of this entire society that this all-powerful government is going to keep you safe. And it's okay to not, you don't have to fight your own battles anymore because they're going to take care of you now because they can stop hate. I mean, they're that good at what they do. They can just stop hate. But the reality is in this, and again, this kind of goes back to some of the things you were saying, Lisa, is that when we find Bitcoin, we begin to see things through a different lens. And then we begin to realize and recognize these things more clearly for what they are. And they really are. It's about control. It's about power. It's about controlling what we say, what we do, how we think. It's about making us more dependent upon them. But the bright side of all of this is when we discover Bitcoin, we have a way to opt out. We have a way to strengthen ourselves. We have a way to bring the power back to where it belongs, and that is into our own hands, so we can be sovereign, defend ourselves, protect ourselves, and have the kind of strength that we need.
Yeah, amen.
Man, I've missed a good Gabe rant.
I know. Well, Gabe, so let me ask you. I guess this is what runs through my mind when I think about us all living in under these kindergartner type rules, right? Like, oh, be nice to your neighbor. Don't say mean things. Go wash your mouth out. It's like when the shit hits the fan, like who are the guys that saddle up and get in the jets and armor up and step into the tank? Like, who are those people? Because they didn't grow up in the kindergarten society. Right? Like, I don't understand why everything has to be about raising, like, weak people. And that really goes for women and men, although I'm not, like, I don't want to go to war. I don't want Ella to go to war. I don't really support that whole thread, but I guess fine, right? But, like, tough mentally is required in life. And we just have all of this gigantic talk about being the world's police and saving democracy around the world. And who, how are we going to do that? Because she's not the one, right? Kindergarten rules for all does not lead to democratic societies globally.
Well, and they want people weak because I think it's easier for them to start wars and push that. A strong people that don't give in to fear, because you can really only start these massive wars once you get the population afraid. So that's part of what they're doing too, is they want complete control so that they can sell you every narrative and they can push every war that they want so that they can get what they want.
And to answer your question, Lisa, I think the most dangerous person in the room is the one that wants to be left alone. And just everyone keeps infringing on his space and crowding him, and his freedoms just slowly wither away. And that's going to be the person that steps up and says, enough is enough. And it'll be surprising at how quickly everybody like-minded with that person takes arms and says, enough is enough.
I agree entirely. Yeah. And Lisa, the best answer that I can come to, for your question is, who's he going to be? It's going to be us. Yeah. And if not us, then who? We're here. We're having these conversations. I've met more people that possess authentic, genuine strength since I've become involved in Bitcoin than I've known in my entire life. People that again, see through the bullshit and recognize things for what they are. And what's more, appreciate the need to improve themselves continuously, to become more effective in every way, to live healthier lives, to put themselves in a position where they can serve other people. Because really at the end of the day, that's what it's about, right? I mean, the longer I'm involved in Bitcoin and the more people I meet, it's not about just getting rich and buying a Lambo and doing whatever you want to do. It's about serving each other. It's about people. And yeah, I believe that, look around this room right now. These are the people. These are the ones that are standing up, because that time is here. That call has been issued. And we are needed right now to act in a way that is, of course, peaceful. But in a way that must be reckoned with and recognized as something that's not going to go away. We're not just going to fade away into the background and let these things take place. And I think that the evidence is there. Proof of work is there. Just look around the Bitcoin space and see what's happening. Okay. We're not stopping. We're not slowing down. If anything, the acceleration is only continuing to increase. And here we are.
Yes. And you're right. And unless someone else has something very urgent they want to say on this topic, I think that was a perfect segue, Gabe, onto one of the things I wanted to talk about today. And that was that report that came out from River Financial and how businesses who hold Bitcoin on their balance sheet have increased 30% over the last year. And so just to kind of give a couple bullet points on that, the businesses represent a large and growing segment of Bitcoin users. They're accounting for about 3.3% of the total supply, or businesses are holding roughly 683,332 Bitcoin as of August 18th, 24. They had a list of all the companies that on their website who held it. But we have Dombey up here, and I'd like to kind of get your feedback, Dombey. I know you work a lot with the unions and trying to get them onboarded, and I'd like you to kind of touch on this if you can. On has it become easier over the last 12 to 18 months, or you find that there's more pushback?
I think generally there is an openness and a brand ID around Bitcoin that has, accelerated very well. I think depending on what's going on, it's interesting. I'm sure a lot of the folks doing adoption and orange pilling work find the same. There's pockets, right? Depending on what's going on, we all get the texts. It's funny, you know, I may not get a text from someone when Bitcoin ran to 70, but then if it drops to 50 and goes to 56, you get a text of like, wow, this thing's really picking up here. And this Bitcoin is on a tear, and it's just kind of where what people are viewing. But overall, I would say it's gotten easier. I think a lot of bigger institutions, and I've talked about this before on Spaces, still see career risk as a very real thing with Bitcoin, even though generally their disposition towards it is more positive. But that's why kind of, our approach is always to onboard any membership-based organization or an institution should follow the format of taking an initial education-based action first that doesn't have risk or heavy consequence, and then take a following group effort that has consensus, right? That's so pivotal to the Bitcoin, this, and especially knowing how volatile it can get, making sure that they're not alone in that. And so if you can imagine a pension administrator or a union board, they can easily just implement something from the top down. But we know that that will not be something that lasts very long, given everyone here has PTSD, right, from being in the space. It can be a roller coaster. We know that over multiple cycles with all kinds of things that can happen. So there has to be that group consensus to make it lasting. So, yeah, sorry, long-winded answer. I think it is getting easier. There is still some career risk and lots of education that has to take place, but generally people view the Bitcoin brand as favorable and resilient.
Well, thank you for that. Is there a catalyst that you see in the near future that'll make it easier for you to onboard other than number go up?
Yeah. I think the adoption headlines obviously help and seeing more of that, despite what we know as some of those names, right? Like the Wall Street names being the antithesis in some ways towards what Bitcoin represents. People still put value in name brands. Number go up, I think, is going to be, a pivotal point. I've talked about how I talk a lot more now to non-coiners. And when you talk about price predictions, there's two main numbers that I've found to exist with no coiners, or what I call dust coiners. Everyone throws out the dust coiners, just having, hey, someone gave me $50 of Bitcoin. They got me to look into some things. I did some education, but I'm just not quite sold yet. I'm going to keep an eye on it. Like those people almost, a large majority of them cite 100K as being like a number that they go, okay, like it's here, I'm going to pay attention. And then true no coiners, I think that number is much higher. So I kind of view 100K whenever that may come as being a huge catalyst for people being, you know, starting to come and approach people being like, okay, I have to get into this and make a long-term strategy. Can you please help me? And I think a lot of people in this space will start getting inquiries about assistance there. But yeah, I think just more positive news and unfortunately number go up is the most reliable impetus behind people finally getting off the couch to take action on something that I think they know right now they should be doing.
Well, thank you. I'd definitely like to get the panel's thoughts on this news that was dropped yesterday. The Fed issues the Texas bank, United Texas Bank, with a cease and desist. They issued a cease and desist order yesterday, citing deficiencies in the bank's risk management systems, particularly in its dealings with the crypto clients. This order follows an examination that revealed issues with the bank's corporate governance structure and identified oversights by the board of directors and senior management. The specific details on the bank's noncompliance with its crypto regulations were not provided. I definitely want to get everyone's thoughts on that news.
Yeah, I'll hop in first. I mean, they used some similar language that was in the Custodia denial of the Fed master account. I mean, of all of the words to use, like risky, describing a full reserve bank just doesn't seem coherent. It has just been a part of the plan all along. You know, I think they were quietly the three bank regulators, OCC, FDIC, and the Federal Reserve. And it, you know, the quiet part was, if you have companies that are within the crypto community, they can only be 10% of your deposits. And, you know, if you think about like the velocity of dollars versus the velocity of Bitcoin, you can see that there's a mismatch. Caitlin speaks a lot about that. I think this was just kind of writing on the wall. I think they were telling us all along that they were, you know, this is what they consider to be another choke point, just like they've tried to choke out our exchanges, ours. I'm using like a big term there, but they've created a lot of controversy and a lot of legal hurdles for folks in our space. So, I don't know. I feel like, you know, the way forward, I guess, is we're just going to continue to walk through crap until there's enough of us that own Bitcoin to where we don't need their system anymore, right? Maybe most of you all, but like I try to just be pretty fairly focused on Bitcoin. You know, financially, like there's almost always zero in my checking account, which just makes me super happy all the time that I think about, you know, hate those banks. I hate dollars. Predictable.
I think people miss the fact that, a lot of these banks are finding customers who are adjacent to Bitcoin. So they're not necessarily, transacting in it too much. But I think the problem is that they're, you know, miners, or they're providing some sort of services. And because there's exposure to that, it requires the bank to go to additional levels for each of those customers to understand those transactions. And the banks are just not equipped to do it. They're not, buying the tools that are out there to understand those transactions and to be able to essentially report on them if necessary. And so the regulators see that as a risk. I work with financial institutions specifically on deposit gathering and treasury management, and then also, things related to Bitcoin, trying to educate senior management of banks and bank boards. And
one of the biggest pushbacks right now from especially community banks is that they're just not clear on exactly what tools they need on the back end to provide services to either Bitcoin adjacent businesses or companies who are providing, you know, on-chain Bitcoin or Lightning services. So I think, custodia is a different animal. I can let, happy to let Lisa talk on that. I just think that the chief concern of the regulators right now is allowing their customers to potentially subvert some of the, the FinCEN things, knowing where transactions are going, all the reporting, all the AML rules and those things. And the banks are just not, they're just not equipped. And they're also, it hasn't been clear, to be honest. So it's kind of an unfair playing ground if you choose to get into it.
And thank you, Bob, for jumping up here, and also uppercase Terrence. Thanks for guys joining. I have a question to follow up with that though, Bob. So I guess my confusion is what is the Fed looking for with regulations? Like, are they making it clear? And the second part to that question would be, in Texas, that the mining companies are just embedded with our energy grid. And I don't see them, how they could leave it, even if they weren't able to bank. So what's the way forward with this? Like, what does the United Texas Bank have to do to follow these regulations if they're given them? Or what's the next step for Texas?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's specific to Texas. As mentioned, there was a bank in Pennsylvania last month that had the same issue. I think this really still just all stems from two things. Unclear regulation. So, like, there is just none. I'll tell you, I've helped develop with the FDIC, basically a crypto asset, as they call it, activity list, and things that banks, like a framework that banks need to provide in order to show that they're competent and can, protect the quote unquote financial system by banking these types of customers. And the lift is, I think, ambiguous at best. They're just not very clear on certain aspects of it, especially related to anti-money laundering. And so to answer your question, I think, we need clear and concise regulation, not these ambiguous, tri-party announcements that are led by the Fed, which we've seen over the last 3-4 years, saying, we're concerned about safety and soundness. We're not telling banks they can't do this, but, we highly discourage them from doing it without, a lot of due diligence. Because there's no clear regulation, it makes it hard for these very conservative bankers to take a step or, dip a toe in the water. And for the ones that have, you could argue it's choke point 2.0 or whatever. But the thing is like, how do you comply with rules and regulations that don't really exist or are not very clear? And so, as for a step forward, I really think we need to see better education conversations. Like, it'll get there. It's just going to take quite a bit of time and lots of education. I think, there was, maybe it was Terrence, I can't remember who said it, but, or maybe it was Lisa, but we just need to keep doing what we're doing as Bitcoiners, as individuals. But keep having conversations with people. And, there was even a point earlier from Dombe that, basically, the brand is good. And so that's great. But, these things just take time. And I think, it's hard to say, when they're not clear specifically on this Texas bank, exactly what it was, but I can tell you just being in the industry and talking to a lot of banks that their big concern is we don't understand what reporting we would need to provide in our exams. from the federal regulators or from even the state regulators. And so we're just not willing to take the step. And then when you see, you know, these banks get cease and desist letters, that's, you know, really not good for your bank brand in the community, regardless of what the issue is, whether it's crypto or not. And it's that reputational risk that will continue to be an uphill battle for these banks to make decisions or take steps towards offering Bitcoin companies banking or offering Bitcoin services directly to their customers until there's clear regulation. So I'll kind of land there.
No, thank you for explaining that. So just to kind of summarize, make sure I understood it right. Looks like we could have regulation in 6 months or we could have regulation in 4 years and 6 months, correct?
Sorry, having trouble getting off mute again. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's very hard. There's going to have to be someone who's, I think, friendly to the space and understands it to lead the charge to make it so that clear regulations come through. And I think then it's kind of off to the races for these banks that have been, you know, educating themselves, because you can't just go, like, from my perspective, like, you can't just go into a bank, start working with senior leadership or with the board and educating them, and then all of a sudden they're just going to start doing this stuff, right? Like, it's a long-term proposition. You have to play the long game and educate these people over time so that they're ready when, you know, there's regulation, or when they're ready, I guess you can say. So yeah, I mean, it is hard to say. Like, we don't know exactly when regulation is going to come to banks, but when it does, it'll be welcome for us. One other thing to keep in mind is there's just different levels of banks, right? So you have banks that are the globally.
Looks like we lost you, Bob. But that comment was made more in tongue in cheek, just because I think if Harris wins, there's definitely not going to be any push whatsoever to try and help the banks become more crypto or Bitcoin friendly. But that leads us into the next talking point, is that Trump go ahead.
I don't agree with that. There's actually a real risk that the crypto bros, Mark Cuban, Ripple, Coinbase, are giving so much money to Kamala Harris as well as Trump that they will be able to dictate more crypto-friendly policies regardless of who wins. I think, like, Mark Cuban's talking about, he's talking to the Harris campaign 2 to 3 times a week. Very few of us have that level of access, even collectively in the Bitcoin space. So there's a real danger that Kamala goes full. The bank becomes very crypto friendly at the expense of Bitcoin, meaning pro CBDC and anti self custody and things like that. So we'll see.
My pushback on that would be, Terrence, would be you have the power to do it right now. So why wouldn't you do at least something that's pro this industry?
Sure. That's kind of like saying a VP runs the country when they're kind of, in many cases, a glorified assistant to the president. They go to funerals, they do things like that. Biden could do stuff, right? And he's been pretty anti-crypto. I can see Kamala going further with prosecution of scams and enforcement of crypto scams. Maybe she calls a full investigation of the founders of Bitcoin and Ethereum. Good luck getting the founder of Bitcoin to show up. But Ethereum's done a lot of shady things that a lot of Ethereum people are upset about, including spending $100 million through their Ethereum foundation, arguably to affect the price negatively and waste money. So we'll see. But I don't agree with, you know, just because he's DT that he could have gotten all this stuff done. That's like saying Mike Pence could have done a bunch of stuff that he didn't agree with on Trump other than on January 6th.
Again,
there's a big difference between Pence and Harris, whereas, you know, Biden is really just a placeholder and was never really in charge or had any power. Not that Harris necessarily has power. She's being handled just as much as Biden.
I hear a lot of Bitcoiners say that. You don't have proof of that. What's the proof that Biden had no power?
I think he said it when Harris took over. is that he's going to allow her to take over because he's not fit to do another 4 years. So that would be a perfect opportunity for her to step up. And if she wanted to lead this industry in the right direction, it would be very easy to draft something. Again, she could just sit on it till after the election to show something like that. But I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, part of the narrative, real or imagined, is that Biden decided not to run for re-election because he didn't want to hurt the country or his party. But he was, I bet he still believes he's good enough to continue. Maybe he's not very good at debates, but in terms of making policy decisions when he's, you know, has time to work with his advisors. But he's still running the country. He hasn't resigned as president, right?
All right, so I got to push back to Terrence. Again, he thought he was well enough. Senior members in his party told him he had to step down. And that's not fabrication. That's not me. Just some guy on a space is talking about.
Read Seymour Hersh's article on how basically it was a coup. Obama said, you're done. Harris is next.
And they let him stay to serve out the presidency. And ultimately, it was his decision. He had a lot of pressure. There was all this money, it turns out, because Kamala raised like $1 billion in 2 months or something, more than double of what Trump has raised in that time period. But there was all this money and pressure being pushing him to resign, but ultimately, it was his choice, right?
No, I don't think it was
his choice. I got to push back again. Everything about it didn't make sense, but I don't want to make this a political thing. So we're definitely going to move on to the next talking point, which I could just talk about how Hunter Biden just pleaded to tax fraud. But I won't stoop that low. We can go ahead and, I want to start mentioning our partners. I want to give a big thank you to them. Black Sheep Ammo, again, they were the ones that donated 6,000 rounds of ammo, to our Bitcoin Nashville Range Day. So very much appreciate them. Check them out, blacksheepammo.com. Punchplate, I saw you guys in the audience. Good morning. Check them out, punchplate.com. That's punchplate.com. If you have your seed phrase, put it on metal. Don't leave it on paper. It can get wet, get wrecked. It can get catch on fire. Punchplate.com. Next up is going to be Solo Satoshi, BitX Mining, or BitX Solo Miners. Solosatoshi.com. And the last one is going to be Silent. Faraday bags. Protect your hardware wallet, your phone, your laptops, your iPads. Check them out at slnt.com/BTC vets. Save 15%. And when I say protect your hardware wallet, protect it from EMP, solar flares, things of that nature. So we're coming up on the top of the hour. I definitely want to, go around and ask the panel if they have any other last thoughts or comments. I'm going to ask we steer away from political comments. Again, I'm not trying to make this a political show. I understand everybody has different beliefs, but let's try and keep it focused on what our mission is.
Sats are super cheap right now, everybody. Very, very cheap. Stack.
I would say if you have kids, pull them out of school one day next week, go do something super fun or stay home and do something super fun. But keep in mind that kids are your kids. They don't belong to the state. It is a tried and true process. I have a case study of one that regularly keeping your kid out of school actually works and they become sovereign individuals. Study one of one. It's a really strong study.
I can attest that I homeschool my kids, and it is amazing.
I just want to thank everybody for being here. Look, it's like I said before, look around. Things need to be done. We can't count on anybody else to do it. We're here for a reason. If not us, then who? So get out there and do it. Find something that's going to increase your own personal freedom and the freedom of those around you, and have a great weekend.
Absolutely. And make sure it's the weekend. Go out there, talk with your friends, talk with your families. Get out there to know your neighbors. Get out there, strengthen that community. You don't have to orange pill everybody you know, but just, place that white pill out there, place that orange pill out there, just let them know that there is other options and there is hope. Not everything is doom and gloom. And so I think that's a perfect way to wrap up this show. Make sure you guys tune in every Monday through Friday. We're doing this 9 o'clock Central Time. I'm your host, Coleman. I want to again thank everybody who joined up on the stage and contributed. It really means a lot to me. And everybody in the audience, I know I didn't get a shout out a lot of you today. Randy K, I see you out there. Make sure you check out the Bitcoin Veterans DIB report, the Daily Intelligence Bulletin. Really easy to catch up with anything that you've missed throughout the day or the week. Again, if you're a veteran and you're listening to this, please send us a direct message and we'll get back to you and we'll connect you with our extended community. We have over 600 vets and we're growing. So please make sure to reach out to us. Make sure you tune in to the Bitcoin Veterans podcast. We do those every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Eastern time. This week we had Shane and Mike talking. So really good topics going on. Check us out every Tuesday. And that's a wrap. I want to thank everybody again, and I will see you all Monday morning.